I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, lordsofpain.net. Wherever you may be listening, Doc says.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the mania era is bringing terror on. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a 5-star podcast, Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania era, the book of sports entertainment and of the doctor's orders on lordsofpain.net. Hello and welcome to the Doc Says podcast here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host, the Doc Chad Matthews, author of the WrestleMania Era series and longtime author of the Doctor's Orders column on lordsofpain.net. And from wherever you're listening, thanks for making me a part of your day. Tonight, it's WWE's second biggest show of the year, and I'm coming into it cooler than a pack of peppermints. And about the product itself, I've not been less excited since I can't remember when. However, I look at this card, which I will momentarily preview quite enthusiastically, and I see potential. One of these days, a paradigm will shift, and WWE will get back to doing many of the things that prompted much of my free time this decade to be spent writing books about it and talking about it on a podcast. And that's going to happen, in my opinion, on nights like SummerSlam, where great careers have peaked or skyrocketed. You can't have a paradigm-shifting event without a potentially paradigm-shifting card, and SummerSlams is loaded with opportunity. Let's talk about it, and get me and you prepped for what hopefully will be, at the very least, a thoroughly entertaining card that quells some ills and generates excitement for the near future. Ember Moon versus Bayley looks great on paper because they are two of the glorious NXT division's top historically relevant talents. The SmackDown Women's Champion near the top and Moon near the bottom of that high-end discussion, granted. Bayley's Money in the Bank double in May is one of the brighter moments of the year, and for the women's division it might rank second only behind the women's main event at WrestleMania. Week to week is one thing, but from a wider lens, Bayley is having a really nice bounce back year, and this is a really good opportunity for her to get a legacy building match in. She's light on big moments at the Big Four, lagging behind some of her vaunted peers, but were she to have a really good 10 to 14 minute match with Moon here, it would look nice on her career CV and her impressive 2019 resume. Time is going to be a factor with these big WWE shows, and crowds tend to get tired, just like the rest of us watching at home, so it's possible that Moon versus Bayley produces disproportionate to its potential, and we don't even mention it once we get to next week's SummerSlam G1 weekend-ish top 10. High end, though, the potential is there for them to have a match in that top 10, which also includes NXT TakeOver and the G1 Climax Final. I've got a sentimental spot for Moon, who had probably the best women's match I've ever seen in person with Asuka at TakeOver Brooklyn 3 in 2017. I want her to get her career to that next level. I want her to begin rising her career toward its ceiling. And I don't think we've even seen her scratch the surface until this opportunity presented itself. Sticking with the women's division, let's switch over to Natalya challenging Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's title in a submission match, because I can see this match being viewed from multiple viewpoints. I think Lynch, who I've not spoken about in a couple of months now in terms of her recent work, has pretty ridiculously been held back from doing anything that would establish her legacy beyond a WrestleMania main event victory. And that's a big deal. That WrestleMania main event victory is a career-defining moment for the rest of her life. That's the type of thing that she'll be able to point to, like Chris Jericho always talks about beating Austin and Rock in the same night to win the Undisputed title. That's her thing. She could grow even further, though. She could be the rare WWE star who has two or more main event peaks. So could Seth Rollins, by the way, if they'd let him. But she and her beau were strapped with crap opponents perfectly suited for the new generation era's popularly utilized Challenger of the Month strategy, but absolutely the antithesis of what two new babyface champions needed to elevate themselves and the company out of the muck. That said, Natty is a good opponent for Becky, I think. They have chemistry on the microphone, and as characters that have chemistry, they are likely to mesh well in the ring. Natty has improved as the NXT classes lifted the talent level and expectations and asked her to keep up. Becky will not be positioned for anything groundbreaking in this role and with Natty as her opponent, but she will have the opportunity to possibly steal the show and more likely to help make the show a really good one. A 12 to 14 minute match in a spot on the card that the crowd can engage with is good for everyone involved. Becky is capable of a lot more, but if this is what they'll have her do, I think she and Natty are poised to maximize what the opportunity does indeed afford. The wild card is the submission aspect of it. That's a little bit tricky for anyone to navigate. WWE hasn't always been great at maximizing those types of stipulation bouts, obviously. The submission match between Austin and Hart is the exception, but that's just not a gimmick that lends itself to a WWE booking strategy, and it's not a gimmick that lends itself to WWE audiences, which just really aren't conditioned for that type of thing. They're used to our WWE audiences, the type of matches that pop you, the type of matches that make you chant, "This is awesome." So it's an interesting booking strategy having the submission match, but one that I like on a card without a whole lot of stipulations. Bray Wyatt's Fiend versus Finn Balor minus the Demon character is a match I'm excited to see. I love continuity, even if it's by accident. And Balor versus Wyatt, with the Demon being brought out of its slumber, was a fond memory of my live attendance at 2017 SummerSlam. Solid work that night, and I expect nothing less from The Fiend's debut tonight. But what has me most intrigued about Wyatt is how he'll wrestle. Will he be different than before? I hope so. Balor is a good opponent for a dry run because he's so smooth with everything that he does and will provide a nice athletic foil for a monster persona. How is Wyatt going to move? Is he going to remain so dependent on standing back and laughing? Frankly, I want to see something completely new from him. I want to see a change in demeanor physically, like we've seen it verbally and psychologically with his Firefly Funhouse segments, which I have really enjoyed, by the way. Definitely a bright spot from the spring and summer to date. The mystique of the Eater of Worlds was gone by the end of 2015. He played that hit until nobody really wanted to hear it anymore, so I'd like The Fiend to bring a new sound, so to speak. The completion of a total reinvention could be remembered someday as one of the most underrated moments of this show. AJ Styles versus Ricochet for the United States title is probably the most anticipated match of the night for me. Next weekend, this show will be a top 10 of SummerSlam weekend, including TakeOver and the final nights of the NJPW G1 Climax, as mentioned. And my preseason-like rankings for that show, the G1 Climax Final is number one, an Alabama or Clemson in college football-esque choice with plenty of past precedent for critical greatness. Styles versus Ricochet is the one match on the SummerSlam card that I feel very comfortable suggesting as a surefire top 10 choice next weekend. I still haven't seen their pay-per-view match from July because I've been wrapped up in the G1 and other promotions, but I have paid attention to the feud that set up that match and this match. I love Ricochet. Styles, let's be honest, is on the decline compared to what he was that first year in WWE. He's still capable of firing on all cylinders in bursts with the right opponent, though. It may not happen often anymore, but it still happens. Could it happen with Ricochet? Surely the potential is there, right? This is Ricochet's first major pay-per-view singles match, and I can't imagine he doesn't strongly desire to knock this out of the park. If they are let loose, with few booking restrictions, i.e., if this isn't another attempt to emphasize the threat of the dreaded OC. California, here we come, right back where we started from, California. Sorry, if you didn't catch that reference, that was the theme song to Fox TV's The OC that practically everyone I knew in college at some point had to watch, be it through a girlfriend, or in my case, a roommate's girlfriend. Anyway, take out the booking restrictions and let these guys loose, and Ricochet and AJ Styles could have a 4-star SummerSlam mid-card all-time classic. Bottom line, hard to imagine it not being very good either way, though. Dudes and dudettes, I have no business being excited for a Shane McMahon match, but it involves a Kevin Owens character that I've been itching to see manifested for a few years now, and anything that has strong potential to put over a contemporary star like him is right up my emotional alley. Shane, Taker, Triple H, Goldberg, that vanilla gorilla that won't go away and whose name deserves no attention whatsoever on this podcast, Vince McMahon, the whole enterprise, gives me the red ass, to be honest. But Kevin Owens is a stud with tremendous everyman potential. In this day and age, I don't think there's anybody who has as much everyman potential as Kevin Owens. Bottom line, as awesome and believable as KO was as the bully heel, there is a genuinely likable personality in person behind that character. A thoughtful and insightful guy with a special needs child and a tendency on social media to stand up to stupidity. I want to root for Kevin Steen, and therefore I want to root for Kevin Owens in this role. I've wanted an excuse to root for his character. Now I have one that fits within the construct of a television show that produces special event fights. Also, and this is the crazy part, I loved the Hell in a Cell match between KO and Shane McMahon in 2017. I thought it was a great opportunity for Owens that helped him maximize a feud that was a lot better than it had any right to be. They were good foils for each other then, and with the face-heel dynamic switched around, I think they're good foils for each other now. Granted, if Shane wins, I will probably swear off WWE for the remainder of the year and be even a game-time decision for Royal Rumble. It's that simple. It would legitimately rub me to that degree of the wrong way. But that's not the outcome I'm expecting. KO, in my opinion, is the fourth most consistently pushed contemporary wrestler of this half-decade behind Rollins, Reigns, and Styles. This is a barometer match for this show, both in the sense that its quality, remember, their chemistry is actually pretty good, and Shane's shockingly good effort against Styles in 2017, you know, there's precedent here. This could be really good. This could raise the profile overall of the event, and in regards to the result, because a KO loss would be a dagger into the heart of fans like myself who have basically been relegated to viewing modern WWE as akin to the Los Angeles Lakers of sports entertainment. It's like trading a top point guard prospect for a washed Steve Nash if Shane beats Kevin Owens. I won't be able to wrap my head around that. But both from the standpoint of the quality and the standpoint of the result, this is a barometer match for SummerSlam 2019. If this delivers to the maximum of its capability, and you would think it would get the time to do so, and if Kevin Owens goes over, he's going to quit, quote-unquote, if he doesn't win. If he does win, if he wins clean, this could be very cathartic, I think. Kevin Owens is a great up-and-coming babyface. Shane McMahon has had a really interesting year as a heel, but he's not really had anyone go over him. So this is a perfect opportunity for him to put over Kevin Owens. He's already done it before. The precedent's there for that, too. I really, really hope that this delivers and that Kevin Owens wins. I think if that happens, then people might remember SummerSlam 2019 as a big step in the right direction. And then it's, of course, all about the follow-up. But we have to have that launching pad And maybe this will be a night when we see one. This is the one part of the preview where I'll be overwhelmingly disparate about something. Goldberg versus Ziggler instead of Miz versus Ziggler is a bummer. Nostalgia is an overutilized, overrated, tapped out resource. Decisions like this one are why WWE complains openly about there not being any real stars in the game today. If every top guy in WWE today had been pushed at least as consistently as, say, Edge was pushed in the 2000s, then the company would be building a new television audience. Instead, guys like Ziggler have gotten stop-started to the point that their kind of push pattern has become the norm. That's never a trend that I'll either like or really understand. Goldberg returns, get the kind of creative attention that featuring a dominant Aleister Black victory on the card could have received. Maybe you don't think Black can be a big star, but how will we ever know unless WWE de-emphasizes its obsession with nostalgia and instead buys that prime creative real estate for talents like Aleister Black? You could argue that this is harmless. I'd buy it. I'd also counter, though, that it's the equivalent of giving kids 200 grams of sugar per day when they should only get 15 to 20, and then wondering why they get sick so often and develop chronic illnesses that they carry into adulthood. It's one of many problems that cause and contribute to the current decline. Profits don't mean quality. American healthcare is among the most profitable industries in the world, but it gets poorer outcomes than all of its industrialized peers. WWE earns more revenue than ever, but that doesn't mean it's healthy. I could go on, but I digress. I just remember SummerSlam being an event in the past that helped build stars to the next level, and Goldberg versus Ziggler really doesn't do anything for anybody. Goldberg will win. It'll be what it is. People will cheer, I'm sure, because that entrance and all that, it's easy to get wrapped up in. But as far as I'm concerned, rewind to the WWE Network's 1998 library and enjoy the guy in his prime when he was dialed in, physical, and believable. And leave it at that, because that's when Goldberg was a legend. And Goldberg now is just getting trotted out of the retirement home at 50-plus years old to take up space. Space that could have been used for somebody else. So, Aleister Black versus Sami Zayn would have looked nice in the 10-minute spot that I'm sure Goldberg versus Ziggler will get. Maybe even 15 minutes. Black versus Zayn would have looked good there too. So, Roman Reigns right now doesn't have a specific spot on the card of this as of this recording, and maybe he won't. This could end up being a Shawn Michaels type 2008 segment, and if it does lead into some sort of scenario with Rowan where he destroys Rowan trying to get to Daniel Bryan, then that's got the potential to be a good segment, maybe a segment better kept for television. But again, I digress. Bryan versus Reigns is one of the big money matches they've got among current stars. There are not a whole lot of big money matches among current stars because there aren't a lot of well-pushed wrestlers that would create a dynamic befitting of the title or the moniker of a big money match among well-pushed stars. Don't rush this. Don't hot shot it at SummerSlam for crying out loud. Let this one breathe, because if done right, Reigns versus Bryan could be a tremendous, tremendous big time, big money match for this era. I'd like to see that at WrestleMania, quite frankly. It could have headlined SummerSlam with the proper push. It's always dangerous because Roman is who he is and Bryan is who he is, but, you know, who cares? This is one of those dynamics where you've got two guys that when dialed in are absolutely fantastic at what they do, and they have proven in the past to have quite good chemistry. So I'm all for that. That's all the mid-card matches that have really been announced. Already talked about them. Maybe something gets added. The Cruiserweight Championship will be defended on the pre-show. Oney Lorcan against Drew Gulak. I've been a little out of touch with 205 Live, though it is pretty much my favorite WWE brand. I'm going to get caught back up in the weeks that follow SummerSlam now that I've got an active network subscription again. I'll get caught up on some of the things that I missed while watching the G1 through the month of July. So, not a lot to say about Gulak versus Lorcan. All I can say is that I hope that they get an opportunity to shine. They're certainly capable of having a good match. I'm not a huge Oney Lorcan fan, but I am a huge Drew Gulak fan, and I would like to see him get whatever opportunity exists for him to enhance his title reign and strengthen the position at overall of 205 Live. Trish Stratus versus Charlotte Flair is a legitimate dream match. I, in my books, have taken to task the overuse of the phrase dream match. Goldberg versus Taker, for instance, isn't a dream match. It was a dream match. Nobody wants to see Larry Bird go one-on-one with LeBron James now. There are qualifications to that expression, dream match. One very important must for a dream match is that it has to be a match that nobody thought was possible. And Flair versus Stratus passes that test barely, because the idea of there being two women that accomplished from two eras vying for all-time supremacy has yet to be actualized until now. A dream match also has to feature two talents who are still capable of producing something memorable for all of the right reasons. Two 50-year-olds kicking each other's butt? That's nice. And a recipe for disaster. We don't know that Trish can hold her own in a singles match, but we do know that she more than held her own at the Royal Rumble last year and at Evolution 2 in a tag team match. So to me, this is the biggest women's wrestling match in WWE history outside of the first ever women's WrestleMania main event, which, remember, earned that status because Becky Lynch got over so huge and because both Ronda and Charlotte were such big stars already. Remember last month on this podcast, All Women's Wrestling episode, I discussed Flair versus Stratus within the context of their historical achievements, how they were far and away the two most accomplished women in pro wrestling's modern history. And I put them head-to-head in a statistical battle to crown the WWE Women's World Cup champion. Charlotte won then, and I expect that she'll win now. I just hope it can deliver, because I'm genuinely excited to see it. Dream matches are awesome when they are used correctly, and I can neither imagine a better use of the concept, nor think of a better pairing befitting of the dream match description from women's wrestling lore. This is potentially going to be great. I really am excited about it in a Rock Hogan way. I think that the crowd might carry it. I think it has the potential to be very memorable in that way. And if Charlotte can equal The Rock's effort back then, and if Trish can equal Hogan's effort back then, Lord only knows what they can accomplish. But I have somewhat high hopes, maybe potentially even unrealistically high hopes. But, you know, that legitimately is subjective hopes. WWE Champion Kofi Kingston defending against Randy Orton is a fascinating one, if you ask me. I'll be honest. At times, I still really dig Randy Orton. I think he spent the post-gender Wyatt flop at Mania days of his career, really since his heel turn, of course. A heel turn does it. Getting back in a good groove. He was excellent as a character during the Jeff Hardy feud last fall, and he had a very good road to WrestleMania, along with a damn good match at WrestleMania. He's done it quietly, which should be hard for a legend of his stature, to do something quietly, but it's almost like people confuse maybe what he left on the table in terms of what he could have accomplished but didn't, with an excuse to completely downplay everything that Orton has done. I have zero interest in seeing him win the title, and I truthfully don't believe that he will. What I do want to see is Kingston get a real chance to be the champion. He's done fine, but like Rollins and Lynch, but to a lesser extent, he has been handicapped in his ability to establish a legacy beyond his title victory at WrestleMania. What he hasn't done is follow up the iconic performance with Daniel Bryan. with anything remotely close to it in quality. It's like apples and oranges, the production from the Gauntlet through Mania compared to what we've seen since then. Now, why is that? I think it's because there's nothing between him and his challengers. In some cases, like Owens and Joe, and it's because choices beyond his control lowered the ceiling for what he could achieve with Ziggler, who I thought was actually a good opponent because they had history. They just chose to put them in situations that didn't really give them an opportunity to optimize what they could achieve together. Orton typically gets good opportunities to optimize. Not always great ones, but good ones. He also has that history with Kofi that strikes the right kind of chord with the smarky SummerSlam bunch. That kind of dynamic has produced magic in the last several years. It's an us versus them mentality that emerges when guys like Orton of the Royal Blood and Preferred Era meet guys like Kofi of the Lost Generations. I love stuff like that. People love stuff like that. We smarky people love stuff like that. The people agree. If both are on their game, this could be one of the top five matches in WWE this year. Orton could damn sure use that to reinvigorate his career, despite some of the good matches and some of the good angles and some of the good, you know, microphone segments and character work. It's been a long, long, long time since Randy Orton has produced a classic, so he could use one. I mean, it's been 4.5 years, man, since Randy Orton had a bona fide classic. His last classic was against Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 31. That was a long time ago. You know, in a comparable period of time, Austin emerged, peaked, and retired. That's nuts. Kofi's title reign could use the classic match, too. It would instantly boost Kofi's reign into a higher echelon all-time. Right now, frankly, all-time and Kofi's title reign don't really belong in the same sentence. Title win and all-time, yes, but not title reign. Not yet. Seth Rollins challenging for the Universal title is in some ways a do-over for the Architect, whose strength is putting together classic performances complete with his special brand of athletic powers, but whose strength was de-emphasized at WrestleMania in favor of what was more of a moment. A great moment, no doubt, but a moment. Losing the title last month was a disappointing end to a very disappointing title reign, which never got much of a chance to shine beyond the outstanding match he had with AJ Styles at Money in the Bank, which sits second on my WWE Match of the Year list right now. There was an albatross, some might argue two or three, hanging on to him and dragging him down during his reign. He didn't do himself any favors with his presumed target audience, that being us, for being kind of a douche in the way he defended WWE and got into it with Ospreay from New Japan on Twitter. It's just been a bummer of a 4 months for someone who spent the first third of the year winning the Royal Rumble and finally taking the Universal title back for the people and the viewers and the wider company. Could a great match and a losing effort be enough to right the ship for Rollins? It certainly couldn't hurt, but the presumption is that he's taking the loss. If we were really on the brink of a revolution in WWE, and this was the night that took it to the next level, then Rollins winning would be a no-brainer, the same as it was a no-brainer for all three of Becky, Kofi, and Seth to win at WrestleMania. WWE needs goodwill from its most ardent followers, because less and less of those followers are supporters. Apologize, create excuses all that you want, but the fact is that WWE doesn't do things today that it did successfully for most of 30-plus years, and it's not for the better creatively, and it's near constantly disappointing. Put Rollins over in the match of his design in a bona fide SummerSlam classic, and let's move on to something more interesting and someone of the modern era who could prove himself capable of greatness if only given the damn chance. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, your quick-hitting, action-packed, mostly enthusiastic SummerSlam preview ahead of tonight's show. I hope it's a great card. Looking forward to it. Honestly, not entirely sure what to expect in this day and age, but I actually rather like the fact that they kept this card somewhat trim compared to some of its more modern gargantuan peers. So we'll see what happens I hope you enjoy the show tonight. I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts on social media at the Doc LOP. Let me know what your favorite matches are. Let me give me a top five, we'll say. And from there, we'll see how next week's show plays out when I present to you the big SummerSlam G1 NXT TakeOver fueled top 10 of the weekend-ish. I look forward to that. It should be a good weekend of wrestling with a lot of memorable stuff, hopefully memorable in good ways. So until then, this has been the Doc, Chad Matthews. Have a great SummerSlam night. And stay tuned next week also. I will give you the full details on when you can expect the audio version of the greatest matches and rivalries of the WrestleMania era to be released. It's coming up very, very soon. Just need to nail down that final date before revealing it on here. Don't want to reveal the wrong one. Let's make sure we got all our ducks in a row. Stuff like this I've learned in the past. Got to be careful with what you say. So thank you again for joining me today. Check out all the post-SummerSlam coverage on the Chair Shot Radio Network. And please remember to hashtag always use your head.
This is just what the doc ordered. I'm saying welcome. They sick of the other shows. Chad here to help them. The author of the Mania Era is bringing terror on radio. This is the preparer for the knowledge that he about to showcase. Like a bar that you lift, his opinions hold weight. He wrote a few books and he's working on another for y'all. This a five-star podcast. Chad, let's get it on.
Author of the WrestleMania Era, the book of